Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Monday, November 3rd, the day before the election. And we will, of course, have all things political in just one moment and give you a chance to make a final case for who your candidate's going to be. Our lines are going to be just humming today, so give us a call as early as you'd like. We'll go to you early. 800-486-8655 is our number. 800-486-8655. Or send an email if you'd like, and that's talk@WPR.org. talk@WPR.org. And I'll need some advice on what we're going to do on Wednesday. All those hours I've spent watching television and reading about politics, it's time, I guess, to go to history, which we'll do the second hour of our program. Just a couple things I want to mention. One is thank you to everyone who came to our event at Marquette University on Thursday. The people at Marquette were just so gracious in putting together a lovely event. We had all of our staff who worked so hard, and we had, over 200 people attended the event at Marquette, and it was great to meet you and share chocolate cake and share political stories. A grand event, and we hope to repeat that. And another mention, we'll talk about this later this week, but several of you have sent me emails about Studs Terkel. Studs was a wonderful man, died on Friday at the age of 96. He was, in the words of the philosopher Jackie Gleason, the greatest. We had great affection for him, great admiration for him, and we'll pay tribute to his life in full measure later this week as he really elevated the et ceteras of history. He was quite a guy. All right, let's get rolling. We have so much to talk about this hour as the final polls are coming in. Barack Obama and John McCain have had massive get-out-the-vote operations in more than a dozen battleground states. Yesterday, of course, today it will continue millions of telephone calls. Just 2 days to go, one day to go, really, and most of the national polls are showing Obama ahead of McCain. And we'll look at how reliable those may be. And if there's a certain point today when the final polls are taken that we put faith in them or we don't. The polls also show that there are six close states, Florida, Indiana, Missouri, North Carolina, Nevada, and Ohio. All were won by President Bush and were made competitive by Obama's fundraising. So we'll be talking about those states, Iowa, of course, as well, New Mexico, Pennsylvania, New Hampshire, Colorado, and Virginia. And how can we forget Wisconsin? Chase Martin joining us. Chase was one of our early guests when we went to Iowa, Dubuque, last January, and had one wonderful time. So he's been following all of this closely and is joining us by phone from Des Moines, Iowa, where he will see what happens with this election. He's managing editor of the Iowa Independent. Ken Rudin joining us the second half hour. He is the National Public Radio political editor, writes the weekly column Political Junkie, and has joined us frequently to talk about politics. And call in. We would love to hear from you. Chase Martin, hello. Thank you so much for being with us.
Good morning, Kathleen.
So where are you spending the next 2 days?
I'm going to be here in Des Moines trying to figure out what's going on the ground. But I'm going to be the information collector this week for our staff. So,
and what do you think will be going on the ground? Do both campaigns have a pretty good ground operation going on?
Yes, and Iowa, like Wisconsin, is one of those states that's just always, contested pretty heavily, and both sides have a fairly sophisticated get-out-the-vote operation. I was out over the weekend watching some of the volunteer efforts. The Obama campaign definitely has some new technology that they're trying to find, ways to teach their older volunteers how to use, fairly new, fairly complicated ways of poll watching, for instance, that, they've changed quite a bit from previous years, just as one example. But, they're definitely making use of a lot of new technology, and from what I'm hearing, they're, meeting or exceeding all of their goals for volunteers so far. The McCain campaign, from what I've been able to tell, has a fairly, traditional Republican last 72-hour get-out-the-vote strategy. But they, too, their offices across the state are humming, were over the past weekend and will be today and tomorrow.
The Republicans have always had a pretty good get-out-the-vote effort, haven't they?
They have. Now, their secret has often been that they're very good at targeting, and they are very good at identifying who their voters are ahead of time and just spending the last weekend before the election, unloading a bus full of volunteers in a particular community and just knocking every door in 2 hours and moving on to the next community.
Right.
So it's a different strategy from the Democrats, who typically, will start in about June and work very heavily on an absentee ballot program. And I know some Democratic staffers who, will be working at it since May or June of a campaign election year. And, 72 hours before Election Day, the Republicans make up all the ground that they lost over the past 4 months.
Interesting.
So, yeah, it's different. And I know a lot of people had their fingers crossed this weekend trying to see what each side was going to be doing.
Senator Obama must have a soft place in his heart for Iowa. He returned to Iowa. Let me ask you why he did that. And it is interesting as we look back that it all started for him in Iowa.
Yes, absolutely. And frankly, when Senator Obama was here last Friday, a lot of us were asking why he was doing that. There has not been a public poll taken of Iowa voters that shows Obama even really within 3 or 4 points of McCain. He's had a double-digit lead since, I would say, September, even August. So a lot of people really do think that it was more of a symbolic visit that he came Friday morning. Others say that he simply wanted to stay close to Chicago so that he could go back and go trick-or-treating since that was Halloween. But, most of us did think it was more of a nostalgia thing than anything else.
This is the time when you look at polls, not that I haven't been looking at polls for a long time, and many of us have, but I've heard that today is the day that you look at, and particularly the Gallup poll that I think comes out at about noon today. What do you make of these polls? Could they be? Let me just ask you about what states you think could be troublesome for Obama, if there are polls that you follow, and what you make of the fact that most every poll, well, I think every poll now has shown that it, with varying percentage points, that Obama is leading and will probably win tomorrow. Do you think that's true?
Sure. Well, I think that at a certain point, it's no longer interesting to look at the polls because, we are going to have a far more important poll coming up in just 36 hours or so. The polls today will tell us quite a bit about who's going to win and who's going to lose. I actually think the most important poll is not going to be a state-by-state poll. It's going to be the Gallup numbers or, an average of the national tracking numbers, because right now we're in that territory, it seems, where, if Senator Obama opens up a lead nationally of more than maybe 6 or 7 points, then the state-by-state polls are going to tell us less than that national poll will, because that means, that 6 or 7 points as opposed to maybe 3 or 4 points nationally is what's going to make a big difference in terms of what the electoral map looks like.
Mm-hmm. It is pretty remarkable that this has gone on as long as it has, isn't it? I'm thinking about how long we've covered this. I can't get enough of it, but it's such a long, long campaign chase, isn't it?
Absolutely.
Oh.
It started earlier than most people can remember a campaign ever starting here in Iowa, and they start early, pretty early here in Iowa, but it certainly has been going on for quite some time. And the fact that both candidates are just still standing is amazing to me.
I know. I think everybody always gets sick after the race, right? You have this adrenaline, which is superhuman, that goes on for so long, and then everybody says, "Ooh,
yeah,
yeah." Yeah, I was reading something today that shows that together, McCain and Obama will spend about $8 per presidential vote. They could have taken us out to lunch, huh?
Yeah.
That's a fair amount of money for everybody in this country.
Absolutely. It is staggering.
Right. What do you make of the early turnout so far in the states that have early turnout? And secondly, what do you make of these? I think it's horrible how long people have to wait in line in some places. 8 hours? Are you kidding me, in some states?
It is. It's stunning that the turnout is so high. One thing, though, that Senator Obama's campaign has done that has sort of artificially increased that amount of waiting, in a lot of places, their efforts were more geared toward encouraging voting early at a county election supervisor's office rather than requesting an absentee ballot and voting by mail. And some of those county election officials just, weren't ready for what hit them when the Obama campaign started doing that. So I have some sympathy for the county election supervisors who, you know, just to see the looks on their faces when they, you know, when a long line of people wanting to vote shows up that they weren't expecting. You know, obviously they should take every precaution to make sure that everybody can vote in a timely manner, because that's really important for a democracy. But still, you know, I have some pity on them.
Right. So you think tomorrow will be a little better because everybody will be more prepared and because so many people have voted already?
I think that in particular in the states that allow early voting, you know, tomorrow could go far more smoothly than it otherwise would have. You know, in a lot of those states, up to a third of the electorate has already voted.
Right. And are there certain states, everybody gets asked this on a day like today, but are there certain states that will, do you think, determine the course of tomorrow night? Are you looking at Virginia, North Carolina, any eastern states, Pennsylvania?
Sure. Well, yes. Pennsylvania, I think, is the number one state that I'll be looking at. And not because I would say because it's a do or die state for Senator McCain. His campaign has put a lot of faith in their ability to win Pennsylvania, simply because if you look at all of the so-called toss-ups on the map, you know, if Senator McCain won every single one of them, he would likely still come up short, depending on whose map you're using. And Pennsylvania is really what he and his campaign have said is, you know, the way they get to the required number of electoral votes.
Mm-hmm.
So if Senator McCain can't win Pennsylvania, his path to the White House becomes very narrow fairly early on election night.
And so Pennsylvania, are there other states that look as though they're leaning McCain, that if they went for Obama would also be an indication?
Well, Indiana, for instance, is a great example. You know, that's one of those states that is so traditionally Republican that, you know, few people have a ton of faith in the polls when they show Senator Obama only up by a few points. And of course, there's Virginia and there's North Carolina, both states that at this point in the polls seem to favor Senator Obama, but, you know, have just had such a strong Republican apparatus and such a weak Democratic one for so long that, you know, it will be amazing if Senator Obama can actually win both of those. But I will be watching to see what the margins look like and what the turnout looks like, simply, you know, because I think that'll be helpful at predicting states as you go further out west. But it's the western states that I think will really decide the election, Colorado, New Mexico.
Mm-hmm. And what about this youth vote? I have heard all along that it's crucial to a victory by Obama. What you read lately is that so far, at least in early voting, it's been a disappointing turnout.
Well, I think that, again, depends how you look at it state by state. The one thing that I've heard the McCain campaign spokespeople making the argument about this is, although turnout among early, you know, although early voting turnout has gone significantly up, the demographics of those who are voting early has not shifted much. So that means that, you know, younger voters who are being targeted with this early voting program, you know, may not be the only ones who are getting targeted by this early voting program. So even if their percentage has not increased as a percent of the total early voting electorate, their numbers have increased simply because the numbers among all groups have increased. Whether or not the younger voters end up making up, you know, a significantly larger percentage of the electorate on election day, I'm not sure. I can say that several states since 2004 have enacted same-day voter registration, which you have up in Wisconsin, I believe, and have had it for
right.
a while. But Iowa, for instance, just legalized it this year. So I think in some states that's going to make a difference as well. And when I talk to youth voting turnout type folks, that's one thing that they cite, although they are a bit worried about address and residency requirements and all of that for same-day registration. But, you know, I think folks are confident that younger voters will turn out at a slightly higher rate. The problem is that all voters are going to turn out at a much higher rate than usual by most people's estimations. So it's unclear exactly how, you know, the percentages are going to work out.
Let's go to phone calls for Chase. Chase Martin is our guest and has been joining us from Iowa, the state that really gave Barack Obama his springboard to where he is now. He is the managing editor of the Iowa Independent, and we're welcoming phone calls. This is the last day we can ask you to make your case for who it is you're voting for. Let's take as many calls as we can for the remainder of the hour. And our number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Our email address is talk@WPR.org, talk@WPR.org. I'm Kathleen Dunn. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. To your phone calls now, it's All Things Political. And we start with Dan from White Lake. Hi, Dan.
Good morning. I'm not going to promote one candidate over the other, but I'm going to point this out. After the 2000 election, I think lots of talk shows, and if I'm correct, even this one, were raising the question of, is liberalism dead? Now, today, the Republicans are telling us that Obama is the most liberal member of Congress. And he's not anywhere as near as liberal as lots of other people I can think of, like Ted Kennedy, FDR, our own, who's that guy that Steve has, the our old Wisconsinite senator in it, that they throw the big party for? Steve Garvey has somebody, one of our historical Wisconsin progressives.
Ed Garvey?
Anyway.
Yeah.
George Bush came along and told us he was a uniter, not a divider, and I think the country is more divided after 8 years of Bush in the White House than it's ever been before during my lifetime. I ought to say I'm pushing 70. I've voted for every Republican since Eisenhower, except for George Bush, and I'm waiting to see if the polls are right and Obama wins. Will we be more united 4 years from now or less? That's my comment.
All right. Thanks very much for the call. Chase, you want to respond?
Sure. Well, you know, I have heard others who watch the polls joke recently that, you know, given what's being said about Senator Obama these days, you know, he's liberal, even all the way to, you know, comparing him to communists or even calling him a socialist. You know, if he wins by the margin, some of these polls say, does that mean the United States is a socialist country now? I think it is interesting. Obviously, both sides tend to use labels to paint their opponents as, you know, more extreme than perhaps they really are on both sides this close to Election Day. But, you know, I think that both candidates also seem to recognize that Americans are looking to be unified. And I think to a certain extent, should Senator Obama win on tomorrow, it'll likely have something to do with the fact that he's just been, you know, he was quicker to that message of, you know, not simply feeling good, but, you know, being responsible for one another in the country, in this country. You know, he really tapped into that earlier, but Senator McCain has made that same sort of emotional appeal a central part of his campaign for the past several months. So, you know, I think that desire to feel unified and also to have a president who, you know, asks something of the American people, you know, both candidates have done their best to tap into that.
Let's go to Tom from Burlington. Hi, Tom.
Yes, I'd like to ask you two questions about Iowa. But first, I'd like to say I'm going to vote for myself. My name is Tom Boyle. I'm on the front page of the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel today. They took my picture. And I announced on Kathleen's show a year and a half ago that I was going to run for president. When George McGovern was on the radio show, I studied economics at Georgetown, and I was a member. I was in the House of Representatives as a page, so I learned how that works. But what I wanted to ask you was this. There were two things in Iowa. My niece, Lara Flynn Boyle, is the actress from Iowa. My mother's from Iowa, too. But what I wanted to ask you this. When Edwards if we knew about Edwards' problem, his marital problems, when Clinton and Obama were running against each other, I wonder what kind of difference that would have made in the momentum of the election.
Okay, Chase.
That's a very interesting question, and it's certainly one that, you know, that we've discussed since a lot of folks really did fall in love with Senator Edwards, and I really mean that, you know, in the terms you'd expect. They, you know, that there are a lot of voters here who, over, you know, the course of 2004 and 2008, just really felt an emotional connection to the Edwards family, had a family photo of the Edwardses up on their mantle in, you know, retirement communities across the state, things like that, you know, that I could list for hours. I think what the consensus seems to be is that at that point in the race, it was between those who wanted to support Senator Clinton and those who didn't want to support Senator Clinton. And the anti-Clinton vote was split, you know, between a number of candidates, but most importantly between Senator Obama and Senator Edwards. And had Edwards had to drop out of the race, which I'm certain if those stories had come out before the Iowa caucuses, Iowans would, you know, would have left his campaign immediately. He would have been forced to drop out of the race. If he had done that, Senator Obama likely would have picked up more of the support than Senator Clinton. You know, exactly how much, I couldn't say. Senator Clinton and Senator Edwards seemed to get, you know, the bulk of the labor support on their side. Senator Obama's labor supports came in, you know, a couple months after he won the caucuses. So, you know, I think you could make a case that certain aspects of the labor movement in Iowa would have gotten behind Clinton had Edwards dropped out. But in general, I think most of the voters who supported Edwards would not have supported Clinton. You know, I think they would have gone to Obama.
Thanks, Tom, for the call. Frank is next from Williams Bay. Hi, Frank.
Yeah, thank you very much for taking my call. My case for Senator Obama is that I like the idea that I at least have some reference as to who he's going to be using as advisors on the economy and foreign affairs and the like. Whereas with Senator McCain, I have no idea who he's going to use as advisors other than perhaps his choosing Sarah Palin as his vice president running mate. Specifically, Obama has said that he's used and will continue to use people like Warren Buffett, Volcker, former chairman of the Federal Reserve, and Rubin, former secretary of the Treasury, as advisors with the economy. I would hardly label any or all of those as socialists. And when he's labeled, Obama, that is, labeled a socialist, for heaven's sake, Teddy Roosevelt, over 100 years ago, initiated the graduated income tax that we've had for all of these years. And Obama is simply suggesting that we go back to what it was in Clinton's days. And I hardly would think that that is, quote, redistribution of wealth. And in terms of foreign affairs, I like the idea that he's suggesting that we at least talk with people who are what we are diametrically opposed to in terms of their way of life. Because, in my view, that would give us center stage to present our case, not necessarily to the guy specifically that we're talking to, but to the peoples of the world. I do have occasion to travel a bit, and some years back, the United States was viewed as the absolute role model of the world. We embodied everything that freedom and democracy should be. And recently now, as we travel, the people that we talked to were viewed as arrogant, bullying, and simply imperialistic and exploitive.
All right. Thanks very much, Frank, for the call. We don't have time to – it was a well-thought-out comment here, but let me just pick up on – he was concerned about Sarah Palin. How does Sarah Palin play in Iowa? Does she have ardent supporters, Chase?
She has drawn bigger crowds than Senator McCain has when she has come. She was here just last weekend, and she's actually in Dubuque right about now.
Oh, is she?
Yes.
Oh.
So sometime today. I haven't pulled out my schedule for the day yet, but I believe it was sometime this morning. So, yes, she will be she draws quite a big crowd. It's not clear how great she looks on television. The local news reporters have had chances to interview her when she's come through town. And, you know, I wouldn't say she comes off as the most knowledgeable on, for instance, agriculture issues, which I saw, you know, one reporter ask her about last time she was here. That said, you know, she has done wonders for riling up the base. There were a lot of social conservatives in the state, even ones who are pretty well networked into the Republican Party here, who really were, you know, going to have to hold their noses to vote for Senator McCain, or at least were saying so, you know, 2 or 3 months ago. And after Senator McCain picked Sarah Palin, that all seemed to go away.
Mm-hmm. Chase, thank you so much for being with us. I hope you get a little bit of sleep over the next couple of days, but you probably won't get much. It's too exciting a race, right?
Yes, and thank you, Kathleen. It's
Thanks,
been
Chase.
Great talking with you over the past year or so.
Don't worry, we'll talk again.
Good, good.
I'm starting to get political withdrawal already, and the election hasn't taken place. Thanks, Chase. We'll talk to you soon. Chase Martin, managing editor of the Iowa Independent, and has been our guest pretty regularly since the Iowa caucus, which got it all started, really, for Senator Obama. Ken Rudin is joining us now. Thanks, Frank, for your call. Keep on the line, those of you who want to talk about politics. It's the day before the election, and we have a couple lines open right now, 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655, or we have an email as well, and that's talk@wpr.org. Ken, of course, the National Public Radio political editor. He writes the weekly column Political Junkie and has joined us fairly often during this presidential campaign year. Hello, Ken. Thanks very much for being with us. Oops, I got the wrong thing up here. Here we go. Hi, Ken.
Kathleen, how could you be suffering from political withdrawal? 2012 starts tomorrow in 2 days.
Is that how you handle the withdrawal?
Absolutely.
You think about 2012.
Well, the midterms in 2010.
Okay, I guess that's the direction I'll go. Well, here we are. It was supposed to have been Hillary Clinton and Rudy Giuliani, right?
No, it was supposed to be Hillary Clinton and Mitt Romney. That was my prediction. But still, the last people standing were not supposed to be Barack Obama and John McCain, and that's just what's so amazing about this year, and it's been amazing from the outset.
It sure has been. The number of people who have been voting early, the number of people who are excited about this campaign, it's a huge presidential campaign, at least in my lifetime.
Well, I mean, you have economic conditions that people are comparing to the Great Depression. You have at least two wars that Americans are fighting in. That's not what you had in 2000, not what you had in 1996 or 1992. So both on the economic front and the foreign policy front, this is a very crucial election. And I mean, we always say this, but I think this time we mean it. There should be record turnout.
Right. And there already has been for early voting, hasn't there? I've heard in North Carolina it's over 40%, Ken.
They say nationwide, it's amazing, nationwide early voters can comprise of one-third of the entire electorate. 4 years ago, it was like 24%. 8 years ago, it was like 18%. Perhaps people just don't want to wait in those long lines on Tuesday, but it really just shows how excited this campaign has gotten, the electorate.
So does it also mean that the president has already been selected?
No, because we have that's why God created Election Day, and that's why it's the first Tuesday after the first Monday in November, and it hasn't been over. I mean, I have never in all the years of following politics, I've never seen anybody this far down, and I think I've not seen one poll that shows John McCain up. I've not seen any election where somebody has come from behind to win it. Now, Hubert Humphrey came very close in 68. Gerald Ford came very close in 1976. Both candidates were down by a lot, but ultimately they lost. So for John McCain to win, first of all, he's going to have to win some some blue states. And right now, the polls don't show him ahead in any of the states that John Kerry carried in 2004. And he's going to have to hold on to the President Bush base. And there are at least six or seven states, or five or six states, that Bush carried in 2004 that Barack Obama is ahead now.
And was it, do you think, inevitable? It's interesting that the poll numbers really switched for Obama. It was much closer before this economic calamity took place. Is that why he's doing so well when it comes right down to it, Ken?
Well, on paper, this should have been a Democratic year from day one. Mm-hmm. President Bush is unpopular. The war is unpopular. There's rising gasoline prices, rising food prices. Now, of course, we did see a big spark of excitement on the Republican side after the Republican convention, certainly after the selection of Sarah Palin as running mate. But once the Dow started to collapse, once the lending institutions started to show their free fall, once everybody's 401ks started to become 101ks, one suspects that that was really what ultimately decided this election.
Mm-hmm. What are you looking at tomorrow? Will you, as Chase Martin, our previous guest, be looking at Pennsylvania to see if McCain can pull off a win there? Is it North Carolina that's on your list? What is it?
Well, there are a lot of states that are very, very close. Indiana, of course, I think McCain wins Indiana, but Indiana has not gone Democratic since 1964. Same with Virginia, though Virginia Obama has a lead there. North Carolina, be very interesting to see the African-American turnout. Not only does the Democrats have a shot there, although I think McCain still holds it, but Elizabeth Dole, the Republican senator there, is in big trouble. Some House members there are in big trouble if there's a big black turnout. And in a Senate race in Georgia, Saxby Chambliss is running for a second term. If the black turnout is big in Georgia, it could jeopardize his future as well.
Mm-hmm. The black turnout is going to be huge, don't you think? How could it not be huge? This is a big election.
Well, no, absolutely. And, yeah. You know, I think you expect to see record African-American turnout, record young turnout. You know, every 4 years we always say, let's do a story about young voters.
Yeah,
and, of course, young voters never vote.
Right.
But this year, you know, we've seen excitement. Everyone I know has been talking about this race, not just the past week, but for months now, for over a year now. And in all my years, and I go back to Tilden and Hayes in 1876, and I've never seen such excitement like this.
And why?
Hilden and Taze. It really doesn't matter, really.
And why is that, Ken? Why? I agree with you. There's all kinds of excitement about this.
You had history in the making. You have, of course, the first. I mean, the fact is that here we are. The polls show an African-American candidate leading in the race for president. I mean, that's just it's history. It's remarkable. It's given the state of race relations in this country. It's something that many of us, except for the people who watch 24, never thought we'd see a black president. Mm-hmm. And also you had the specter of a female president for the longest time with Hillary Clinton. That got a lot of people excited. And the Republican Party, look, this is a different kind of a lot of Democrats would love to picture John McCain as a third Bush term. But John McCain is a different kind of Republican too. He has stood up to his party for many of his years in the Senate, and he's not the typical GOP candidate as well. So there's a lot of new things going on here. A lot of states that may be voting ways that they haven't in decades. And again, with the economy in trouble, with the U.S. relations with countries overseas, well, of course, all the countries are overseas in trouble. I suspect that this really could be a watershed election.
Yeah.
But wait. Let me just say one thing
about that. Sure.
Here we talk about watershed elections, that this could be a major change. 1972, Richard Nixon won 49 states. 2 years later was Watergate. 1984, Ronald Reagan won 49 states. 2 years later, the Democrats won control of the Senate. Hmm. 1992, Bill Clinton came in, got big majorities in the House and Senate. 2 years later was the Gingrich Revolution. So for all the talk about these watershed elections, how this will change everything for decades to come, mm-hmm. we've seen in the past that all these – that it could very well turn – within 2 years. So don't count that out as well.
Yeah, but in a sense, it is watershed for the Democrats because they never win, right? I mean, they haven't won the presidency very much in the last 50 years.
Well, of course, they did. They won the most votes in 2000, but they didn't get the most electoral college votes. And had 60,000 voters switch their vote in Ohio in 2004, John Kerry would be president. So, I mean, it's been close. Certainly the last two have been close. I suspect this will not be as close.
Mm-hmm. What do you think about Governor Palin? Was she a bad choice here, Ken?
Well, the fact that we're still talking about the running mate means, I suspect, it is a bad choice. Mm. I don't think she is. I don't think if John McCain loses, it's because of Sarah Palin. At the time, I thought it was an inspired choice only because she wasn't on anybody's top list. A lot of people say, well, gee, if only Mitt Romney were the running mate. But John McCain didn't like Mitt Romney. They didn't get along. So I think that chemistry would have been – the lack of chemistry would have been clear on the campaign trail. Then a lot of people said, well, maybe he should have named a pro-choice somebody like Tom Ridge, the former governor of Pennsylvania, or Joe Lieberman. Well, he could have named a pro-choice a running mate, and a lot of disaffected Democrats might have liked that. But there would have been a mutiny at the Republican convention in St. Paul. So he didn't have great options. And the thing is, Sarah Palin only had a week or two to prepare for this national attention she's gotten. Obviously, Barack Obama, by running for president for 20 months, he's refined his speeches. He's refined his message. He's gotten much better. Joe Biden was first elected to the Senate in 1066. So he's been around for a real long time. So obviously, he's been around a long time. But I think, I mean, Palin probably was not the ultimate choice. Her lack of experience and lack of knowledge showed on the campaign trail. But as I heard earlier in your show, she has drawn huge crowds. She's excited the Republican base. And believe it or not, there are Sarah Palin 2012 buttons already out.
Do you have one? I know you
do.
You
I
do?
I do.
So how many do you have in your collection now?
Well, including that one, 75,000.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. But this is an amazing year for it. I've never seen so many different groups and nationalities and states buttons for Obama. There's, you know, deadheads for Obama. There's a white racist for Obama button, which I don't understand what that is at all. But you know something? It's been the kind of campaign that, remember, in the 60s when everybody was – excited for different reasons, but the war in Vietnam was raging on. The 68 election excited a lot of people on college campuses. And it's the first time really since 68 that I think has really excited the electorate.
Mm-hmm. And if he wins tomorrow, there will be probably a million people in Grant Park. How many years later?
Well, absolutely. But yeah. This time, I suspect it'll be more out of joy and less with tear gas,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, right. Let's go to phone calls. John from Milwaukee. Hi, John. You're on with Ken.
Well, thanks for the wonderful after party on Thursday, Kathleen.
Oh.
Great.
It was fun, wasn't it?
It was a great day, Kathleen.
Great. Great. Thank you.
We always have Ken Rudin giving a trivia question. I'm going to give one to him. He can name four out of the six United States senators who voted against the war resolution on April 5th, 1917. And then I'd like to have him comment on everybody's compared this race to 1960, but I see it more in terms of 1912 when Debs got 900,000, almost close to a million votes, and really shook things up in Washington. And I'd also like you to comment on a couple of close Senate races, if you could.
Sure.
Well, I love the question about the four senators who voted against the World War One in 1917, and I don't know the answer to that. But about comparing it to 1912, the difference with 1912 is that the Republican Party was really split. You had President Taft, who was and Teddy Roosevelt, who split the Republican vote, and sort of like the way Bill Clinton got elected in 1992, the Republican base was badly split, allowed Woodrow Wilson to get in. So I do think it's like more like 1960 in that. John F. Kennedy, of course, was not black, but he was Catholic, and I suspect that in 1960, being Catholic was just as unusual for a candidate to be as being African-American. And, you know, we talked about Kennedy's youth and inexperience and religion, and so and of course, his appeal to young voters. So, again, this is not a done deal. I don't want to talk about it as if this race is over already, but it reminds me a lot of 1960 and the way it is. A more established figure on the Republican side, then it was Vice President Nixon, now it's John McCain. On the Senate, it looks like, my numbers right now have Democrats picking up seven. They need more to get to the filibuster-proof majority of 60. I don't think they reached that far, but they will pick up seven, and that's pretty impressive given the fact that they had such a good year in the House and Senate, both in 2006.
Mm-hmm. North Carolina being one of them?
I think Elizabeth Dole goes down.
Really?
Republicans have not been impressed with her. She's been an absentee senator. Her service on the banking committee did not help her in the midst of this fiscal crisis. Some of her later ads, people say, are smacking of desperation. And Kay Hagan, the Democratic challenger, is not even an exciting candidate. She's not an impressive candidate. Apparently, she was the Democrats' fifth choice to run
really?
For the Senate. Every other Democrat turned it down. And yet, that's what's amazing. That's what's being in the right place at the right time. Remember, in 1992, all the Democrats felt that President Bush, the first President Bush, had 90% approval ratings because of the Gulf War. Nobody wanted to run except this Arkansas governor by the name of Bill Clinton. So, you know, you got to take your chances when you're offered them. And Kay Hagan in North Carolina certainly took her chance, and she may come out ahead.
You know, Robert Dahlig is with us the next hour of our program, who's written extensively on a lot of presidents, including a wonderful book, An Unfinished Life, about Robert Kennedy, and writes about that 1960 election. So just a promo for next hour. We will talk about that more. Let's go back to phone calls. John, thank you so much for being with us, and thanks for coming to Marquette. And let's go to Relda from Long Island, New York. Hi, Relda.
Hi, how are you?
Fine, how are you?
Thank you for taking my phone call.
Sure.
And please excuse me, we're traveling on the road, so, you know, if we get lost, please excuse us. But real quick, I just wanted to say it's been a really interesting trip across country here. In relationship to this current political wave that we're all under right now. But I just wanted to point out, my husband and I, we did vote early because we knew we were going to be on the road. We're in Long Island, New York, and we did vote for McCain. We feel that Obama's, political stand is not going to be the best interest for people who are employed in jobs that are not high income earning. If Obama does start penalizing employers on the issue of not giving medical coverage, then a lot of people are going to end up losing their jobs. The very help that he thinks he's going to be giving is actually going to undermine a lot of homes. I say this as a former single parent who, you know, did live without medical insurance, who is also a cancer survivor, you know, and by the grace of God managed to get through it. But still, it's a thing to where if Obama had been in office at the time and he was penalizing my employer for not giving me medical coverage, the very security I was offering to my daughter and myself would have been taken from us.
Ken.
Well, that's an issue that the Republicans are harping on. You know, in all honesty here, for Barack Obama to say that 95% of the people of this country, 90% of the voters or workers are going to get a tax cut when this is the economic situations are really in bad shape, it almost seems like either he's kidding us or he's kidding himself, because I don't know how that's possible. I think the Reverend Wright stuff, the Bill Ayer stuff, I don't think has the resonance among voters as it does about the uncertainty about what Barack Obama would bring when it comes to taxes and penalizing small businesses. So I think that's the argument that McCain is pushing in states like Ohio, Pennsylvania. Whether it's successful or not, it's, you know, we don't know yet, but that's the argument the Republicans are making.
Ken Rudin, our guest. More phone calls in a moment on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. To an email now, Ken, Andy from Madison writes this: a lot of people think early voting helps Barack Obama. If more of his voters vote early, you'd expect that would lower his exit poll numbers on Tuesday, because fewer of his voters will go to the polls on Tuesday. Are polling organizations and the networks doing something about this? Is there a possibility it could create skewed numbers in McCain's favor, a perception that McCain is doing better than he actually is?
Well, that's a very good question, because the exit polls, the dynamic of exit polls definitely changed with all these early voters. One survey I saw in North Carolina showed that of those who have voted early, 60% have supported Obama, or at least according to exit poll surveys. But those planning to vote on Election Day have it a dead even. So for all the reports of exit polls, and of course, a lot of Kerry people thought they were going to win in 2004 because of the early exit polls, a lot of people may hear numbers more favorable to the McCain than is reality. But ultimately, I don't think early voting helps anybody or hurts anybody. It just gets more people to the polls. I mean, it's very possible these people would have turned out anyway on Tuesday. They just have the opportunity to vote early. So I don't know if it helps anybody, but it certainly is the likelihood of increasing turnout.
Gay from Madison. Hi.
Yeah, hi. I worked for Kerry tirelessly through Move On and was heartbroken, of course, and still am one of those who believes it was stolen. But I went back this time, and I was first a Hillary girl, and then I decided that Obama was pretty good, and I've been working a lot for him through Move On. And what I've been doing, last time I canvassed, and I canvassed and canvassed and walked, and this time I can't walk so well, so I can call, and I've been calling wherever Move On asks me to call. But I'm wondering if there's any good data that I'm actually not wasting my time, especially at this point, and I'm going to go down today and do it again, but at this point, are people more put off? Have they decided? You know, is there any good scientific data that says...
Are you spending your day wisely, is she, Ken?
Well, I mean, do I... Well, here's the thing. What John Kerry did not have in 2004, and he talked about this yesterday on Meet the Press, what Obama does have is money. John Kerry did not have the money. He pulled out early from Ohio, from Florida, from Pennsylvania. Well, he won Pennsylvania, and from Colorado. Barack Obama has enough money to be competitive in all 50 states, which is so remarkable. So I mean, I don't think anybody is wasting their time or just, you know, flailing around with only a day to go. But I suspect, I can't say... I know that some states are obviously more competitive than others. Ohio, Pennsylvania, Indiana are far more competitive than Minnesota, Wisconsin, for example. Mm-hmm. But again, it's you know, if you believe that 2000 was stolen, if you believe that 2004 was stolen, all I can say is just, you know, get all your friends to vote, no matter who they vote for, just to make sure that every vote counts.
Thanks, Keith, for the call. Scott from Fond du Lac. Hi, Scott.
Good morning. In 1976, I went to Jimmy Carter speak at the WBAY building in Green Bay. I was 12 years old. And ever since then, I've just been captivated by politics. And I've watched, I stay up all night, every election, and I watch the results come in. And my question is, I've never seen a situation that I can remember where the media has such an impact on a presidential election. I mean, if you look at the Project of Excellence in Journalism, you look at Pew's information, the last 2 months, Obama's got 61% positive stories, and McCain has got 65% negative stories. And it just seems to me, I'm wondering, how much of an impact has the media had? Because you talk to Pat Caddell, who's a famous Democratic pollster, Kirsten Powers, Democratic pollster, they admit the media is in the tank for Obama. And I'm wondering, has it ever been like that before?
Well, I think, look, it's fair to say that Richard Nixon was nobody's favorite among the media. The media never liked Richard Nixon, and he won 49 states in 1972. So sometimes the voters know better than the elite media. But you know, it's interesting. I'm just trying to think of how to phrase this. The candidates are making their cases. I think it's really a question of what the issues are. The fact is that there's no two way. It's not a media spin that the President Bush is unpopular, the war is unpopular, prices are rising. On paper, this seems to be Democratic year. Now, I think part of it may be the fact that a lot of the media was were loved and wooed by the old John McCain, and they got disappointed this year. But I think the campaign has been fair? Coverage? No. Do I think that Hillary Clinton got the same kind of coverage that Barack Obama got? No. Do I think that was many of the media were in the tank even then? Yes, I do. But ultimately, I think that it's not going to be whom the media support on Tuesday. It's really about what the issues and what the next 4 years are going to look like. But I agree with you. I think the media have had a huge influence and role in 2008, as we saw it in the Democratic primaries as well.
Mm-hmm. Well, and there's something about his story, don't you think, Ken? There's something about the playing out of race and how horrible it's been in this country, and the fact that African Americans couldn't even vote until not that long ago. The fact that there are a couple wars going on. There's almost a depression happening, and he's a new person. He's new to all of this in many ways, and it's amazing that he's been able to do what he has. But the press plays a good story. He's an amazing story.
That's true, but then again, so was Hillary Clinton. And you talk about, I mean, theoretically, blacks got the vote in 1865. Of course, there was, you know, such suppression through the 1960s. But women didn't get their vote until 1920, so you can make the case that Hillary Clinton was a good story as well. I think whether it's a good story or not, I think that, you know, the media should be fair and just report what's out there, as opposed to, if you look at the critical stories about Hillary Clinton, there were far more than there were about Barack Obama. But I think she had more of a record that you could pick at, whereas Barack Obama, being new and fresh, and mm-hmm. had less things to pick at. But she certainly had more baggage than Barack Obama did.
Yeah. And you'll certainly have your choices tomorrow, listening to radio and also watching television. You'll get different political perspectives, right?
As you should. I mean, right. But of course, people turn to MSNBC because they know what they're going to hear. They
right.
turn to
sure,
Fox because they know what they're going to hear. So that's a little disappointing, and that's why that's why God created NPR.
Right. Of course, Ken. I know.
Exactly.
And thank goodness for it.
Thank
so
goodness.
How are you going to spend the next day and a half? Well, a couple
I'm
days.
I'm taking off. I'm going to the beach. No.
Yeah, right.
Well, I don't know. I mean, tonight from 10 to midnight, Neil Conan and I have a special on many NPR stations about a pre-election special tomorrow.
And we are carrying that. We want to let everybody know.
Oh, phew.
Yeah.
tomorrow from 7 p.m. to 3 a.m. NPR will be on the evening all night long. Well, no, actually, it's 2 hours earlier than usually. We go off at 5 a.m., but if it's concluded by 3 a.m., if we know the results, we'll be off at 3 a.m. And so, look, it's, you know, I think that's the reason God created December, because that's when we sleep. But right now, it's too exciting. The adrenaline is still there. There's no fatigue. There's no exhaustion. It's really here. I mean, it's been 20 months. It seems like it was going on forever, but here's something I haven't said ever. The election is tomorrow.
I know. The election is tomorrow.
Yeah.
The election
just even
is
hearing
tomorrow.
That. I know.
Yeah. And then will you, I know you do this for a living, and it's been an incredible campaign, but will you suffer some of that withdrawal that I know I'm going to suffer? I know I will.
I do remember being depressed on election nights that after all the work that we're putting in, and here it is ending right now. But as I said, you know, candidates are going to start going to New Hampshire very soon. There's a Republican dinner at the end of November that I suspect the Mitt Romneys and the Sarah Palins of the world, or maybe even Jeb Bush, you know, those kind of people will be talked about. Look, it's a never-ending cycle. Of course, it goes on longer than it should. And the word honeymoon is one word you may not see too much, because so much needs to be done. Even before we start talking about 2010, 2012, so much needs to be done. The American people know it. And if we just focus on the politics of it, which is unfortunately for me, I do that. But obviously, governing has to come into play as well. And so much has to be done, obviously.
Yeah. Oh, Ken, thanks so much. You've been a great contribution to all our coverage, too. I just love talking to you. Thanks so much for being with us.
Kathleen, thanks so much for having me.
Ken Rudin. And Ken is going to be up for a couple days, it sounds like. Just a reminder that tonight we will be carrying special pre-election call-in hosted by Neil Conan. And Ken will also be on tonight from 9 to 11. Tomorrow, live coverage starts at 6 p.m. and we'll be doing Wisconsin Public Radio election coverage and National Public Radio election coverage. It will go until at least 2 o'clock in the morning, and then they'll decide, depending on the results, whether or not they're going to keep going even later into will it be Wednesday morning. So that's the story, everybody. Thanks for all of your contributions to All Things Political. Isn't it amazing? 2 days from now, we'll be talking about the results. Thanks to Rhonda Fanning for producing this hour. Thanks to Chase Martin and Ken Rudin for being with us, and to Rhonda Fanning as well for on-air production here in our studios in Milwaukee. We have news coming up from National Public Radio, and then we'll look at other elections with an emphasis on 1960. Are there comparisons? This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.